Welcome, everyone. This is our first Pioneer Inspired event. So CANNP and Beth Gorbett and Wendy Gibson, they're at the back waving there. They got together with us in November last year and said, we'd really like to do an inspired event with the Nutritional Preceptorship Program and put the two events together. So we decided to do that, and we're very, very excited. It looks like we've got a great turnout and we've got a great speaker. So I'm really excited to be able to present Lorna Vanderhaeg tonight. She's just completed a book and has a great product line, and there's a table at the back with some of her reps there as well. So I'm going to welcome Lorna Vanderhaeg. She's one of Canada's leading women's health experts. Lorna's authored several books, including The Smart Women's Guide to Hormones and The Smart Women's Guide to Weight Loss. In 2009, Lorna won the Canadian Health Food Association's most prestigious award, the Hall of Fame Award. And then in 2011, Lorna was listed as one of Canada's top 100 female entrepreneurs. I'm sure she needs no further introduction to this group. We're so honored, Lorna, to have you here tonight, and really excited to hear what you have to say. Welcome.
Thank you. Had people across the country who've also taken this course and then moved away and who said, oh, I'm so sorry I'm not in Toronto. And I'm very, very honored to be here tonight and talk to you about nutrition and hormones. And it's a big topic. And so I tried to pare it down because there's so much we could talk about. And I really wanted to focus on how food affects hormones when we're talking about the whole topic of hormones, because it's something that our doctors really are not taking into consideration, especially when they have women in front of them with polycystic ovarian syndrome, women in menopause, women with all of the estrogen dominant type conditions. So I'm going to talk about food initially and how contaminated our food source is with man-made hormones, which are then seriously disrupting our male and female hormones, not just in women, but also in men and our children as well. So I'm going to go through that, and then I'm going to talk about the key nutrients that are found in the foods we eat and how they can balance your hormones, detoxify your hormones, or increase your hormones. And we do have my Smart Woman's Guide to Hormones book, which is literally a Bible on hormones, here for sale tonight, and it's $5 off. And we also have my Smart Woman's Guide to Weight Loss, which the entire book is on how hormones are conspiring to make us fat. So that book really looks at food and what it's doing to our hormones in the body. So I love this quote, because you're helping people every day. Patch Adams says, a person does not care how much you know until he or she knows how much you care. And that's really important, because this is what we do every day, is help people. And we really have a lot of work to do because people are sick and they're not getting the help they need in their doctor's office. These are the healing foods, and nutrition is boring. I have to tell you, when I first came out of university with my nutrition degree, I was so excited. I was going to talk to everybody about what they could do with their food, and I had done my master's of science in how food affects genetics. So for me, it was so exciting. You know, we could turn on and off cancer cells. People don't want to change the way they eat. So I learned that very quickly, that they would rather eat this. And that's the sad fact. And so we are always counteracting the fact that people don't want to eat this. They would rather eat the bad things. And it's especially bad because as parents, we have to understand that the way we teach our children how to eat in the first 5 years is going to be the way they eat for most of their life, because those are the comfort foods that our mom fed us that made us feel happy. So we have to be very aware of that as mothers in the audience, or people who are making the food for the family. Fats. This is a whole category. I've written a book years ago called Healthy Fats for Life with Carleen Karst, who's a registered dietitian. And the whole fat story is such a bad one. You know, if I hear the words low-fat, no-fat food as part of a healthy diet, As you all know, it is not part of a healthy diet, and the low-fat, no-fat foods are making our skin wrinkle, our brain shrivel, and creating a lot of disease because people are not getting the good fats they need in their diet. And the thing about fat that we have to understand is that when fat goes on your tongue, it tells hormones in your brain that you're satisfied. So when we put people on low-fat, no-fat diets, they crave sugars extensively. So we need to have lots of good fats, olives, extra virgin olive oil, organic coconut butter, fish, nuts and seeds in their raw state, not the kind with all the sugar, the salt and the spices on them. I put this together because there's this whole debate about organic food. Every time I see the news talk about the fact that organic food doesn't have as much nutrients as we say that it does, and compared to commercial food, it really isn't that nutrient-dense. The bottom line is, who cares? Organic foods, the reason why we buy them is because they are free of pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides. That's the reason why we're spending that little bit of extra money to have organic foods. And when I talk about estrogen mimickers, these are man-made estrogens in the environment, pesticides are the most powerful estrogen that is out there. So when we're talking about organic foods, we have to understand that the reason why we want to eat them, yes, they do have increased nutrition, but secondly, they're not full of estrogenic compounds. So this was put together by the U.S. Organic Association. And children receive up to 35% of their lifetime toxic load of cancer-causing pesticides by the time they're 5 years old. That is shocking. Trace amounts of 17 pesticides were found in the top baby food sold in the U.S. and Canada, and no genetically modified free soy baby formulas are available today. They're all genetically modified formulas. Environmental estrogens and estrogen-like mimickers are linked to cancers, and they're found very heavily in pesticides. So we'll talk a little bit about those later. Commercially grown produce contains high levels of toxic metals, especially cadmium and arsenic. So this is commercially produced foods. Commercially produced produce is 25% lower in potassium, selenium, zinc, chromium, calcium, magnesium, iodine, and iron. And so if we're eating those every single day, and remember, most people are not eating 7 to 10 half-cup servings of vegetables a day, which is the minimum number of vegetables we need to eat to get basic nutrients. So most people are nutrient deficient. 80% of all cancers are caused by toxic chemicals in the environment. People believe that cancers are caused by genetics, family history, but the majority of the cancers are caused by the environmental pollutants that we're exposed to, stress, and other toxic agents. Up to 25 pesticides were found in U.S. apples, strawberries, tomatoes, peaches, U.S. cherries. Actually, the Environmental Working Group did a study and found that strawberries had up to 16 different pesticides, and that a child under the age of 5 should not eat one. Not one strawberry. And I remember this mother who had a 3-year-old. She went picking strawberries in a field, commercial field, with her 3-year-old, who then, you know, went along behind her and ate a lot of strawberries. And this poor child broke out with this massive rash all over the body. Think about the amount of pesticides that poor child was exposed to. Pesticide levels are higher in domestically grown fruit and vegetables. You know, we often hear a lot about chili and, you know, out-of-the-country products, but our pesticide levels in North America are quite high. And the poor farmers, the Canadian farmers who are commercially producing food, have extremely high rates of prostate cancer, and they also have very high rates of Parkinson's disease. So two things that are linked to pesticide exposure. And pesticides encourage life-threatening bacteria to grow on crops. And then E. coli could increase 1,000-fold, states Greg Blank. This is a famous researcher who's looking at E. coli in cows. He's a researcher at the University of Manitoba. He believes it's because of all the pesticides that are sprayed on the crops that are then fed to our cows. And cows fed grain produce a more acidic environment in the gut, which is much more favorable to E. coli. So grassland-fed beef does not have the same level of E. coli simply because their gut is in a healthier state. So what do? We eat organic. We eat organic as often as possible. And I do thousands of lectures. And, you know, in a week I can do 4 or 5 consumer lectures. And everywhere I go, I tell people, if you buy organic food, the cost of it is going to drop dramatically. The section in the grocery store will get massive, and the commercial food will be in the corner. So it's all about supply and demand. So we always have to remember about organic food, especially when we're talking about hormones. I love the Environmental Working Group's website. You should use it because this is a nonprofit organization. They were the ones who lobbied the government to get rid of chemicals and cosmetics, or at least state them on the label so people could learn about them. They have another website called skindeep.com that has every single cosmetic, shampoo, conditioner, deodorant, all of them listed, mouthwash, toothpaste, to tell you how hormone disrupting they are. So it's another contributing factor to our hormone mess. But this is a good one because they do this every year. They do it twice a year, actually. They go across the country and they pick fruits and vegetables at random from grocery stores, and then they go back and test it. And you can see the 10 most contaminated vegetables and fruits. Apples are in there. Every mother thinks apples are healthy. Apples that are commercially produced are not healthy. And people think they can peel the apple and it's all fine. No, because they start spraying when the apple flowers, and then they spray throughout the process. So cutting the label off, the skin off the apple is not going to make any difference. And then the 10 least contaminated. So if you're trying to save money, buy the 10 least contaminated foods, commercially grown, and the most contaminated, never buy them unless they're organic. Frankenfish, a third of all the salmon eaten in North America, half of all the shrimp, almost all the trout are farmed. And farm tilapia, which is very common, you'll see it in restaurants now, has a terrible, super high, bad omega-6 content. So do not buy tilapia, don't buy it in a restaurant. And when we look at shrimp and prawn farms, they're literally bacteria-laden soup bowls. They grow them on the ground and they're just thick. It's an absolutely awful sight. This is mainly in Taiwan. Farmed fish have 50% less omega-3 and DHA than wild salmon and wild fish. And farmed fish are exposed to lots of pesticides. The word pesticide covers things like herbicides and fungicides as well. And the reason is because in the fish farms, they're trying to control the sea lice population. So they're giving lots and lots of pesticides to do that. Then they're feeding the farmed fish cow ruminants. So I can tell you a fish would rarely see a cow in the ocean. And yet we're feeding them those. And farmed fish have much higher levels of PCBs, 10 times the amount, than wild fish. So we need to buy wild. That's really where we need to go. And I live in Vancouver. And when you fly up the West Coast, you will see hundreds and hundreds of fish farms that are polluting the ocean. So it's an environmental disaster. A lot of the fish that are grown in the fish farms are also for our fish oil industry. So that's another big concern, and most people don't think about whether or not their fish oil supplements are green. And yet, that is going to be a big factor in the future because we finally got mainstream medicine recommending all these this fish oil, but now where is it coming from, right? Fish farms. Then we have estrogens in the environment, and we have tons of them. And I just talked about pesticides at length because when you're helping people in your practice, you have to take into consideration that if they've got a hormone problem, their hormone problem may actually be happening because of what's going on in their environment. So the foods they're eating, the things they're putting on their skin, the things they're exposed to. in Kelowna, which is a city in BC, they get all of their municipal water supply from the lake. But the big problem is their sewer treatment plant, once all of the water is treated, they put it into the lake. And then they take the water out of the lake as their city water supply. And one of the big problems with women taking the birth control pill and hormone replacement therapy is they are organic molecules. So when they go through the sewer treatment plant, they can't remove them. They end up in the lake. They said if every single person in Kelowna stopped using hormones for 25 years, the lake may be clean. 25 years. So these are just things that we should be thinking about as a society, because I deal with a lot of hormone issues all day long. That's what we do in our office. And we have to understand the environment is playing a big role in this. So these are just some of the most common environmental estrogens. Pesticides are a big one. Pesticides fit right into your estrogen receptor, just like estrogens made by the body. Dark hair dyes, they all contain phenylene diamine. Parabens, so that's methyl paraben, propyl paraben. When you put things on your skin, you have to think about what's in them, because the skin is a great delivery system. We use the skin to deliver drugs because it is a fantastic delivery system. And so we have to be aware of what's in our cosmetics. And that's where the skindeep.com website comes in. All plastics, we heard a lot about the BPA and the baby bottles and the plastic. That's just one of hundreds of estrogenic compounds in plastic. So never heat plastic, never microwave in plastic. If your water bottle in the car gets hot, throw it away. Don't drink it. Farmed fish, we talked about that. The pill and HRT, which are so common today. The traditional treatment in the doctor's office for any hormone problem is the birth control pill. And today we have literally thousands and thousands of teenagers that are being put on the pill to treat hormonal acne and to regulate periods, which I'll talk about in a little bit. Commercially raised meat and dairy, very high in estrogens, especially dairy products that are commercially produced. And meats are high in estrogens as well as synthetic testosterone. They put tebalone into all of the meat that they're producing. And bleaching chemicals used to make things like toilet paper and tampons white. Who cares if they're white? We really don't care. All of those chemicals are not a good thing. This was in regards to a study that Health Canada did. Canadian researchers were involved in it in Calgary, and they found that a high cheese diet was linked to prostate cancer in men and testicular cancer in young men. Well, they were, of course, looking at traditional cheese, so commercially produced cheeses, which have high amounts of estrogenic compounds in them. We have bad estrogen in food. When we consume coffee, it raises our estradiol levels in both men and women, and men do have estrogen as well. Alcohol. The reason why the Canadian Cancer Society tells women to reduce alcohol consumption is because when you drink alcohol, your estradiol levels go up in response. We've talked about the dairy and the meat, the chicken and the fish and the vegetables, soy products. We cannot test estrogen levels in blood. And the reason why our doctors never want to do hormone tests on women in blood is because of the fact that estrogen is not indicated properly when we do blood tests. The best ways to detect estrogen in a woman would be in a 24-hour urine test or a saliva test. So they finally did some very good work, researchers did. It was published in a nutrition journal, and the name will come to me at some point, where they gave women 1 8-ounce glass of soy milk, and then they tested her estradiol levels in saliva. And they discovered something quite frightening. Estradiol went up 380%. So that is not a good thing, because estrogen's job in your body is to make things grow. It's a very powerful hormone. And it's in women, it's designed to make the uterine lining nice and thick and juicy. So if you get an egg in there during ovulation, that the baby has somewhere to live for the next 9 months. But we do not want to be walking around with super high levels of estradiol, because that lowers your progesterone and creates increased risk for cancers. So I've never been a fan of traditional soy products. I like fermented soy in small amounts used as a condiment, tempeh, miso, soy sauce, where you're not going to be drinking 8 ounces of it. I had a client who was trying to get pregnant, and she had come to our fertility program at work, and we had done everything, and we usually are quite successful. And finally, I said to this girl, "Are you drinking soy?" Because she had checked off no. I said, "Said in our questionnaire, do you eat soy? Eat soy." And she had said no. So I said to her, "Do you drink soy?" And she says, "Oh, yes, every day I have a venti soy latte at Starbucks." And she could not get pregnant, and took us a couple of months to detox her. And then she was able to get pregnant because all that soy she was drinking every day was lengthening her cycle, so she could not get pregnant. So soy is a very big contributor. I hate the word phytoestrogen. So people banter around this word phytoestrogen. They don't really know what it means. So the word phytoestrogen means that it can mimic estrogen, so act just like estrogen, fit into an estrogen receptor, or block estrogen. And so you have to be aware of what it can do when we're talking about using phytoestrogens. Because of my experience helping women with their hormones over the last 15 years, because that's been my major focus, I really don't like things that are estrogenic in food, because if you're trying to fix a problem, they tend to contribute to messing things up. And you can't always tell what people are eating that are going to create this problem. So fermented soy, why do we want to use fermented soy? Well, non-fermented soybeans contain enzyme inhibitors that block protein absorption. Athletes don't like soy. They already have been told by their trainers not to use soy products because it inhibits your red blood cells from carrying oxygen, so you don't have the same amount of stamina that you need. Fermenting soy, so as soon as you ferment it naturally, what happens is it deactivates hemagglutin. So this is another contributor to blocking red blood cells carrying oxygen. And fermented soy enhances protein absorption and isoflavone absorption as well. So fermenting it just makes it a better food. Think about milk, which isn't a healing food, and then fermenting it into yogurt, which becomes a healing food. As soon as we break down all those enzymes and proteins, it makes it a much safer food to consume. This is Skin Deep's website, and I just put this together so you could see how important this website is, because it's got every single cosmetic, deodorant, toothpaste, mouthwash, and I just listed a few of them that are very toxic. So Arid Extra Dry Deodorant, Escape Perfume by Calvin Klein, Clairol Herbal Essence Shampoos, Jergens, Sally Hansen's Hard as Nails. Go and check your own products that you use on that website and pick the things that are the least toxic. And sunscreens. When the sunscreens come out, they are one of the biggest hormone disruptors that people use. So check your sunscreens as well. This was in the Vancouver Sun, and this is a funny story because this was a large article in the Vancouver Sun about all the toxic estrogenic compounds in cleaning chemicals. And they actually list the names of the products: Lysol, Murphy's Oil Soap, Pledge, Tilex, Ajax, Strain Wash, Palmolive, Joy, Sunlight. They were talking about the increased rates of cancer from the use of cleaning chemicals due to all the estrogenic compounds. The very next day, Sunlight and Joy got full page ads. I can guarantee you it was because they didn't like what the newspaper said about their products. But again, another contributor to environmental problems and estrogenic conditions, especially estrogen dominance. The word estrogen dominance means you have more estrogen in relationship to your other hormones, like progesterone and testosterone. And our hormones need to be in balance. They talk to each other and they communicate with one another. When your cortisol, which is your stress hormone, gets too high, it actually fits into your progesterone receptors. And then your progesterone looks like it's not doing its job. Well, it's not, because somebody else is sitting in its house. And so we have to understand that all the hormones communicate with one another. So when you are estrogen overloaded, what happens is our thyroid goes low. We end up with no sex drive. We'd rather be taking out the garbage. Our progesterone is reduced. So estrogen and progesterone are definitely two hormones that really work together, because estrogen needs to be controlled. Progesterone tends to do that. Cells grow out of control, and we end up with all of the female problems that we see, like fibroids, endometriosis, ovarian cysts, breast lumps, in the worst case scenario, breast cancer, heavy periods caused by a thick uterine lining. These are just some of the conditions. And low thyroid is epidemic in Canada today. We have 23% of the population that is already on thyroid medication. We have another 30% of people walking around with low thyroid that have yet to be diagnosed, and I'll talk about low thyroid in a moment. Cellulite gets bad if you have too much estrogen. Migraine, headaches are a big problem, as well as raging hot flashes and night sweats. These are the women whose doctors put them on Premarin or estrogen replacement therapy, but they still were sweating. Those women were already estrogen overloaded, and giving them more hormone replacement actually made their problem worse because they were estrogen dominant. Women with heavy periods have higher risks of breast cancer. Why? Because period problems are the earliest warning sign that your hormones are out of balance. So if you're already having things like breast lumps and endometriosis and heavy periods and ovarian cysts, your body's telling you you're estrogen overloaded. And we need to do something about it and not take the birth control pill as the solution, because the low-dose birth control pill contains 7 times the amount of estrogen that we would give to a postmenopausal woman who's on estrogen replacement therapy. There is nothing low-dose about the pill. It is much lower dose than it was when it came out in the 50s, but there is nothing low-dose about the birth control pill. We also are seeing a huge increase in precocious puberty in little girls. So this is 8, 9, and 10-year-old girls getting breast buds, periods, and pubic hair, and so much so that in Vancouver, the Vancouver School Board now has a class for teachers to teach them what to do with grade 2 students that are getting periods. And last night when I gave my talk in Mississauga, I had 5 mothers that all came together who had 8, 9, or 10-year-olds with periods. And it's all associated with our environmental soup of hormones that is happening. So, you know, the doctors spend a lot of time and the drug companies teaching us that the sole source of hormones in the female body is the ovaries. And they did that because back in the 50s when they launched Premarin, they actually hired a medical doctor to write a book called Feminine Forever, and then sent him on the road teaching women and doctors that if you didn't take hormones, you basically were a female castrate, their words, and you were not good to your husband. And I have women today who come to my talks who are, you know, in their 70s, who are afraid to come on estrogen because they might get old. So that's how successful that campaign was. But your hormones come from many places, not just the ovaries. And the interesting thing is, after 50, the highest rates of estrogen receptor positive breast cancer are found in women who supposedly have their ovaries shut down and aren't making hormones. So where is all the hormones coming from? Well, every day in men and women, we make our hormones from cholesterol. So all of our male and female hormones are made from cholesterol. We have to have adequate amounts of good cholesterol to make our hormones. And smart doctors know this. You know, if you go to your doctor and you're 43 and your cholesterol is going up, a good doctor should look at your hormone levels to determine if your cholesterol is going up in response to your female hormones declining. So all of our male and female hormones in men and women are made from cholesterol, and cholesterol-lowering drugs disrupt our hormones, and I'll talk about that in a moment. The biggest backup system in the body is the adrenal glands. When the ovaries shut down at menopause, the adrenals are going to make estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA. These are two little glands that sit on top of your kidneys, And they literally are your backup hormone system. They also help you deal with stress because they produce cortisol. And what makes the difference between the woman who hits menopause? She feels fantastic. She can't figure out why her friends are fanning and flashing and crying and forgetting their keys because she feels wonderful. Well, the woman who feels wonderful at menopause has great functioning adrenals. Her ovaries shut down, the adrenals kicked in, they made the hormones for her, and she felt great. In men, when their adrenals become exhausted, they develop beer bellies and breasts. So in women, we have a whole host of hormone problems when our adrenals are exhausted. So the adrenals are the backup hormone system. The thyroid is like the master conductor. It tells all your hormones in the body what to do. And of course, we have an epidemic of low thyroid. Another interesting thing is that your ovaries have little receptors on them for thyroid hormone. So when you develop low thyroid, you develop a whole host of female hormone problems as a result. The liver is the sentinel organ for hormone function. Your liver decides if your testosterone is going to turn into estrogen. Your liver decides if your healthy estrogen is going to become cancer-causing estrogen. Your liver decides if your progesterone is going to become testosterone. And your liver detoxifies hormones when they get too high. Unfortunately, people are popping Advils and drinking too much alcohol, which then, of course, disrupts our hormones. The connection, of course, with the high estradiol levels when women drink alcohol is due to the liver's failure to detoxify it fast enough. The gut is everything from your mouth to your butt. So if you have gas, burping, bloating, constipation, or diarrhea, you will have hormone problems because your digestive tract is involved in detoxifying hormones. Fat cells are the most dangerous hormone factories in the body. Your fat cells produce estrogen, and they're involved in a conversion of estrogen via the enzyme. And so we want to have less fat cells, so we don't want to get lots of them. Combine that with cortisol, which is your stress hormone, which when it's in excess makes those fat cells become resistant to fat loss. So when you're under lots of stress, the fat cell gets bigger, the door on the fat cell slams shut and does not open up to dump the fat out. So that's why the fat cells get bigger and bigger and bigger, and particularly the fat cells that sit around your middle. So that's where the belly fat stress connection comes into play. And the ovaries are relegated to the bottom of the list because although they're very, very important during the childbearing years, in every single woman, the ovaries are going to take a much-needed rest at menopause, or they may be removed during a hysterectomy. We have the highest rates of hysterectomy in the world here in Canada. The number one reason for hysterectomy is heavy periods. So that's the leading reason for hysterectomy, and those heavy periods are usually caused by uterine fibroids or polyps, again, estrogen-dominant conditions. So cholesterol-lowering drugs, this is a really important study that was done. It was published in the Procedures of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, so a cancer journal, and they looked at cholesterol-lowering drugs, the statins, Lipitor, Mevacor, Zocor, and Crestor. They had over 66,000 women in this study. They were all taking cholesterol-lowering drugs for a year or more, and they discovered something quite scary. Cholesterol-lowering drugs raise estradiol quite high, and cholesterol-lowering drugs also inhibit coenzyme Q10, which is a breast cancer protective nutrient. So you end up with a double whammy. Very high levels of estradiol, which cause abnormal cell growth in the breast, and then a reduction in CoQ10, which is breast cancer protective. So this is an important study, and it's been quite buried. The drug companies have been doing these positive studies to bury this one. But this was a very large study that was done, and so we always want to get people off those cholesterol-lowering drugs. Lipitor has received approval to be able to prescribe to children. Yeah. So, but of course, if we've got overweight kids, their cholesterol is going to go up. The doctor's going to want to give them something. So it's all about food, food, food to reduce this. The fastest way to lower cholesterol is with massive vegetable consumption. if you ask a room full of consumers what they think is the best thing to lower cholesterol, they will tell you it's oatmeal. They do not know that big vegetable consumption is what you need to have to lower cholesterol naturally, and it works very quickly and very fast. But the reason why I'm telling you about this is because it messes up hormones. So if you have a client in front of you and they're on cholesterol-lowering drugs, you need to be aware their estradiol will be higher. And so if you're trying to solve some problem, just understand that one. The liver is the key to hormone balance. What clogs our liver up? Poor food, alcohol, stress, antidepressants. You know, Prozac, we know, inhibits the CP450 system, which is your detoxification system in the body. Also causes massive weight gain. Many of the antidepressants can cause up to a 60-pound weight gain in a matter of weeks. And I can tell you that the doctors don't warn people of this because they wouldn't take the antidepressant. NSAIDs are a big problem for our liver. And you know, people think if it's in a pharmacy and it's over-the-counter, it's got to be safe. And we know it is not. Pesticides and cosmetics are also a big thing that clog up your liver. Think about what you do in the morning as a woman. You get in the shower, you wash your hair with shampoo, conditioner, you use shaving cream, scrubs. You get out of the shower, you coat yourself from head to toe with cream because you don't want a wrinkle. You put cream on your face, foundation, blush, mascara, eyeliner. You spritz, mousse, gel your hair. You coat your armpits with deodorant and spray on perfume. By the time you leave the bathroom in the morning, you are totally toxic, and your liver's got to start detoxifying all of that. So we need to become very good label readers. And so what do we do to fix the liver? Well, the great thing about the liver is it is definitely easy to get it functioning well again. We start the day with fresh squeezed lemon juice, not the, you know, reconstituted yucky lemon juice in the real lemon. You don't want that. So fresh squeezed lemon juice or apple cider vinegar. I love Omega Nutrition's organic apple cider vinegar. Swedish bitters is another one, just to get digestion going properly. People who are not hungry after they've slept all night, this is very common in women. They wake up in the morning, they're not hungry. They feel hungry maybe around 10:30. That's because they do not have enough B vitamins. B vitamins are used to make your digestive enzymes and to signal you that you want to eat. So it's a very classic symptom of B vitamin deficiency. You want to eat beets, dandelion greens, artichokes, arugula, lactic acid, fermented sauerkraut, rhubarb. These are the things that are that your liver loves. Cantaloupe is another one. High quality protein. And the reason why is because protein is contains glutathione. Glutathione is one of the most fabulous things for your liver. And whey proteins contain glutathione in high amounts and cause you to produce more glutathione. Antioxidants like lipoic acid and selenium, grape seed extract, the vitamins A, C, and E, and taurine. Whenever I have someone standing in front of me with big bags under their eyes and it's not because they haven't slept, they're taurine deficient. So it's a really good indicator. Those are quick little things that you can check and go, wow, they need to have some more amino acids. Get lots of fresh air, rest, walk. We have nutritional supplements that contain liver-supportive nutrients and essential fatty acids, things like borage oil and fish oils. I like calamari oil because it is not produced in the sea. They actually grow it on land. It has a very short life cycle. It breeds quick, and it has a short life cycle, so it does not get heavy metal poisoning. It's very super high in DHA, so it's a great omega-3 for that reason, and it never causes the fishy burp back, so the repeating that happens. So it's environmentally friendly and very, very high in DHA, and DHA is what we need for our brain, our eyes, and our heart, and for lowering blood pressure. DHA is the fastest thing for that. This is a hormone chart. It comes right out of a medical textbook. The reason why I've included it here is so that you understand that hormones don't just stay as one hormone. The only hormone in the body that doesn't convert to another one is estriol. And estriol is produced in high amounts in women when they're pregnant, to protect their baby against the bad estrogens. Estriol is also the only safe estrogen that we can use bioidentically. But I put this together because you'll have a lot of people who are using progesterone creams or heading across the border and buying progesterone creams. And progesterone, you think from what you hear on TV, is harmless. And yet progesterone is about as far from harmless as you can get, because progesterone, first we have cholesterol, which turns into pregnenolone, which then becomes progesterone. Progesterone can be used to make cortisol. You go across again, and progesterone can be used to make male hormones, and then the male hormones are made into estrogens. So this is important because a lot of people are loading up on progesterone. Their doctors may not even know that because they're self-medicating. And then we end up with things like male facial hair growth and brown spots, which are an indicator of too much testosterone. Or we end up with sore breasts. Anyone on progesterone who gets sore breasts is converting to estrogen. So that's not a good thing. And this is a really important part of hormone balancing. So all of these things are contributors when you're trying to help people sort out their hormone problems. Then we have the period. You know, we should learn this when we're in school. And, you know, somewhere around grade 6, they separate the girls and the boys, and they take us in one room, and they teach us about periods and pads and the birds and the bees, and we all leave there completely confused. Well, last year, one of my sons came home from school. He was in grade 7, and, you know, you have the usual conversation when they walk through the door. What did you do today? Normally, they say nothing. But he said, oh, we had sex ed class. I said, really? I was so excited because no man has ever been able to tell me what they taught him in grade 6. They don't remember that conversation. So I said, what did they teach you? And he said, he looks at me very worried, and he stands there and goes, well, if you have a cold sore here, it can end up down there. That was it. That was all he got from sex ed class. It was so cute. And then he went running upstairs because, you know, nothing else mattered. But we should learn about what a normal period is, because I'm telling you that period problems are the earliest warning indicator that the hormones are messed up. So if you have a 16-year-old at home who's really suffering, this is telling you that she's got hormone disruption. And if we don't solve the period problems early, we develop endometriosis, ovarian cysts, uterine fibroids, breast lumps, you know, crazy PMS, all the things that are associated with hormone disruption. So we count the days of a menstrual cycle. Day 1 is the first day of bleeding. In the first half of the cycle, estrogen rises. Estrogen's job is to make your uterine lining thick. That's its job. Most women ovulate or pop out an egg between day 10 and day 15. If you actually got pregnant, progesterone would rise 100-fold. If you didn't get pregnant, then progesterone will drop. So in the second half of the cycle, this is progesterone, progesterone will rise quite high. In women who have terrible hormonal migraines right before their period, their progesterone falls too far too fast. And so we do things to raise their progesterone. In women who have, if you're not pregnant, your progesterone drops. That signals the uterine lining to slough off, and you have another period all over again. I think that teaching people when they ovulate is important because, you know, you only get 12 tries a year. You should know when it happens. And if you don't want to have a baby, you definitely want to know when you're ovulating, which is usually between day 10 and day 15. We have such a big problem today because 1 in 6 women are infertile. These are women of childbearing years. And since 1975, male sperm counts have dropped by 50%. So we have a big problem with fertility, and I'm going to talk about other things that are associated with that. But what about the women with the heavy periods? What is going on with them? In the first half of the cycle, estrogen rises, but progesterone doesn't kick in because of all the environmental estrogens. And then as a result, the uterine lining gets thicker and thicker and thicker, and then when the woman finally does have a period, she has these horrible floodgates that open, and then she becomes anemic, and then we end up in a vicious cycle because as soon as you're anemic, you bleed more. So it goes hand in hand in hand. Dr. Geraldine Pryor in Vancouver, she's with the University of BC. She is a big fan of progesterone, and she went out there and she studied estrogen levels in women from birth till death and discovered that women have tons of estrogen well into their 80s. And that makes complete sense. We know that because the rates of estrogen-related cancers are so high in postmenopausal women. So don't let anybody tell you that you don't have enough estrogen. The only women who need estrogen are women who have vaginal dryness, thinning of the vaginal wall, urinary incontinence, or painful intercourse. And then we use vaginal estriol. We don't take estrogens orally. And I was just at one of the largest bioidentical hormone meetings, and they are no longer recommending that women take estrogen by mouth. And that is because your liver does very scary things with that estrogen. So what do we do for estrogen-dominant conditions? We change the diet, if they'll change their diet. So you want to eat a lot more vegetables, organic vegetables. We get rid of dairy products that are commercially produced. We teach people about soy and how hormone-disrupting it can be. De-stress, because when cortisol goes up, estrogen goes up. And worse yet, to compound the problem, when cortisol is high, fits in the progesterone receptor. So now you have high estrogen, high cortisol, and super, super low progesterone. So you end up with lots of abnormal cell growth in the body. Walk 30 minutes every day. Doctors keep telling women that the birth control pill is to regulate periods. I can tell you that when you take the pill, there is no period happening. It is a fake bleed. It happens only because the hormones are stopped. That is the reason why they can put people on seasonal for 12 months at a time and have no periods, because you're not ovulating, you don't have a regular period. So don't ever let a doctor tell you that the birth control pill regulates periods. There's no regulating that goes on. You have a fake bleed. If you had a problem with your periods before you went on the pill, you will have it when you come off. And today I see literally dozens of women every week who went on the pill at 16 for their hormonal acne and are coming off at 30, and they cannot get periods back. They now have none. They're put in this menopause-induced state at 30, which is very distressing when you want to have babies. So the foods that balance hormones. The reason why the Cancer Society tells us all to eat broccoli is because it is loaded with some very key nutrients for balancing hormones. Indole-3-carbinol is one of them. DIM is a breakdown product when you eat foods containing indole-3-carbinol, and then as well as sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is going to become the greatest cancer-treating drug, because right now they're extracting sulforaphane and modifying it to become a cancer drug. So indole-3-carbinol is so fantastic because it helps to detoxify hormones when they get so high. They also, the great thing about indole-3-carbinol is you have this healthy estrogen in the body, but it can turn into cancer-causing estrogen, which is called 16-hydroxyestrone, quite easily. And so indole-3-carbinol blocks that from happening. When the Cancer Society tells you to eat broccoli, what they don't tell you is you would have to eat 10 cups of broccoli every day to get 200 milligrams of indole-3-carbinol. Like, that's a lot of broccoli. And you'd have to eat it raw. And when we eat raw broccoli, then we get the goitrogenic effect when you eat 10 cups of it against your thyroid. It takes about 10 cups of broccoli to block your thyroid. A serving of broccoli at dinner is going to do nothing to your thyroid gland. It's one of the big myths we have in the nutrition field. Indole-3-carbinol protects us from estrogen-related cancers, particularly breast, ovarian, uterine, and cervical. And the big thing with indole-3-carbinol and cervical cancer, today we have this big push to vaccinate all our little girls against HPV. And I hate that vaccine for one reason only. Diane Harper, who's the lead researcher who developed the Gardasil vaccine, when it first came out, she went public to warn moms that we never had any women under the age of 18 in any of the clinical trials. So she said, we have no idea what will happen when we vaccinate girls when they're first developing. She said, we actually could be creating more cancers in the future. We don't know because there were no 12-year-olds in our studies. And she wrote in McLean's magazine, she went on the news, she went public to warn mothers, and they silenced her. So, you know, we really need to look at this vaccine and what we're doing. It has four strains of HPV in it. Two of them can initiate cervical cancer. But I want to tell you that at this moment in this room, 50% of us have HPV. That is how common it is. So why is it every one of us does not develop cervical cancer? Well, HPV is a brilliant virus. It actually needs that toxic estrogen I was talking about called 16-hydroxyestrone in order to develop into cervical cancer. If 16-hydroxyestrone is not present, then HPV is harmless, completely harmless. The interesting thing is 200 milligrams of indole-3-carbinol will reverse abnormal pap smears caused by HPV and stop you from producing 16-hydroxyestrone. How do we know this? Rocky Mountain Labs in Calgary was doing tests on women. They have a urine breast cancer risk assessment test. Women who take products with indole-3-carbinol in it do not produce 16-hydroxyestrone. This is the best way to protect your cervix and to keep you free of that cancer-causing estrogen. Women on the birth control pill produce tons of 16-hydroxyestrone. Women who take oral estrogens, whether they be bioidentical or synthetic, also produce lots of 16-hydroxyestrone. Indole-3-carbinol shuts it down. So this is a wonderful nutrient for that reason. Indole-3-carbinol also stops goiters, so abnormal cell growth in the thyroid. It's been shown to halt the thyroid gland from getting large tumors on it. So it works for that also. It's probably one of the greatest things for halting abnormal cell growth. And we have to start thinking about things like fibroids and polyps and ovarian cysts and breast lumps as abnormal cell growth. They may never become cancer, but I can tell you if you develop a 3-pound fibroid in your uterus, it will become very problematic, even though it's not cancerous. And indole-3-carbinol halts this. I love it because it has the ability to turn on and off cancer genes, which is the other reason why I like it. DIM is another ingredient that would be quite helpful. When you eat broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, and kale, you get indole-3-carbinol. When you chew it and you swallow it in your gut, that makes DIM. That's the breakdown product of indole-3-carbinol. And we now have DIM in a stabilized form that you can also get in nutritional supplements. And DIM in humans has been shown to increase by 75% the production of good estrogen and lower the bad. Because we have good estrogens and bad estrogens. The great thing about indole-3-carbinol and DIM is they lower the bad estrogens that are causing all the cancers and the abnormal cell growth in the body. The other thing that indole-3-carbinol and DIM do is thin out the uterine lining. So women with super heavy periods end up having that normalized as well. So it's one of those great nutrients. Lots of breast cancer research is being done right now using DIM as well. A lot of people who sell DIM think it's the panacea, but we always have to remember that DIM is the breakdown product of indole-3-carbinol, and indole-3-carbinol has lots of other breakdown products that we haven't even researched yet, that we don't even know what they do. They may be contributing to the wonderful effects of indole-3-carbinol. Deglucurate is a powerful detoxifier. So when you detoxify things through your liver, we have two types of detoxification, phase one and phase two, which I'm sure you learned a lot about. Whenever we have people who put consumers or people on cleanses, and they say to them, you're having a healing crisis, that's why you feel so bad, you've got the nausea, that should never happen. That tells you right away the person has a terrible detox system. The great thing about deglucurate is it packages up the toxins in the body, so they actually leave the body in your stool. And that is why deglucurate is such a fabulous detoxifier, and it particularly focuses on hormones. So when the hormones get too high, deglucurate, wraps them up like a Christmas present so they can be excreted in the bowels instead of having it dumped into your body. So that healing crisis concept, if you ever hear it, is quite false. It means that the person's detoxification system is not working well. And deglucurate is made in abundance from apples and grapefruit and mung beans when you eat them. So this is, again, the reason why vegetables are so important for hormone balance, is because it helps to detoxify. You can also get it in a nutrient. Green tea extract is another one that's been researched for liver health particularly, and to balance hormones. It's also an anti-cancer agent because it works on different initiation phases of cancers. It also helps detoxify estrogens. If you're going to drink green tea, it has to be organic, because green tea creates tons of fungus. So they spray the green tea with tons of fungicides. So you have to take green tea in an organic form. Don't ever use it unless it is organic. It's also a potent anti-inflammatory agent, and it's been researched for prostate cancer also. Curcumin is the superstar. It's the yellow pigment in turmeric. It's a powerful natural anti-inflammatory. There are a few double-blind placebo-controlled studies going on right now for Alzheimer's prevention and treatment, because it also helps calm inflammation down in the brain. We like it because it stops inflammation that's associated with estrogen-dominant conditions. If you have endometriosis, you will have lots of inflammation, because you've got cells that normally line the inside of the uterus, outside the uterus, on the bladder, the bowels, and inside the pelvic cavity, and they bleed every month. So that creates lots of scar tissue, inflammation, and pain. So we use curcumin for that as well. And curcumin is also one of those nutrients that can turn on and off cancer genes. And it works on all the phases of cancer: initiation, promotion, proliferation. So we're going to see a lot of focus on things like curcumin in the future, because of all the great research that's going on worldwide using this nutrient. And curry foods would be a great option. You know, there's virtually no Alzheimer's in India, and you would never go to India to study Alzheimer's disease, because it's not a common condition. Yet here in this country, by the time we're 65, 15% of Canadians have some form of dementia. By the time we're 80, 50%. 50. And it's more common in women than men. And so for all the women in the room, we really want to focus on dementia prevention, so that you're not sitting there at 75 and not knowing, you know, anybody around you or your family. Rosemary extract also has good research. They're looking at it even further in regards to its ability to stop abnormal cell growth that is associated with high levels of estrogen. So these are things we can eat in foods. If you don't like those foods, you can always take them in nutritional supplements as well. And when we're looking at balancing hormones, I've been using a combination of these to stop heavy periods within a couple of months, to shrink uterine fibroids, to stop breast lumps, to halt ovarian cysts from returning, and to generally balancing the hormones. We also use these ingredients for women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, because they can keep testosterone levels in balance. Women with PCOS have super high testosterone and high DHEA, which then contributes to their infertility, their inability to have regular periods, male facial hair growth, weight gain, and also acne. So they work well for that. These are also the greatest treatment for hormonal acne in teenagers, and we see a lot of hormonal acne again in perimenopausal women. So here you are, 45, heading towards menopause. Some months you may ovulate, other months you won't. On the months that you don't ovulate, the body sends out tons of male hormones, and we end up with acne. So we want to control that by using these kinds of nutrients. And of course, we can do it with food as well. If people actually ate the right kinds of foods, we could turn on and off these hormones. Sulforaphane, one of my favorite nutrients. It's found in high amounts in broccoli sprouts. You can buy broccoli sprouts in the grocery store,
It's also found in broccoli, as well as all of the cruciferous vegetables like Brussels sprouts and kale and rocket. So arugula is another one that contains sulforaphane. You can get sulforaphane now in an ointment to treat abnormal cell growth on the skin. Works great for reversing brown spots on the skin as well. High levels of progesterone. We see a lot of this now in women who are using progesterone creams without the aid of someone monitoring it, and they get a lot of brown spots on their face and their cheek and their forehead. We also see brown spots caused by the birth control pill as well. So we can use sulforaphane to treat brown spots in the skin, but it's another nutrient that is very powerful at detoxifying phase 2 detoxification, so making that pathway work properly, just like calcium D-glucarate. And although D-glucarate, the full name is calcium D-glucarate, I've stopped saying calcium D-glucarate because people think it's a calcium supplement, and it's not. It's just D-glucarate bound to calcium. Milk thistle, the Canadian Cancer Society sent out a warning in 2008 about the daily use of milk thistle and elevating prolactin levels in the body, which could increase breast cancer cell production. And so milk thistle is a great herb for liver detoxification. But what has happened over time is a lot of nutrients now have milk thistle in them, multivitamins with minerals, for example. A lot of nutrients are adding milk thistle to them in the mix. And that's a problem because we now know from a new study that was done in women that daily use of milk thistle elevates prolactin. Prolactin causes breast swelling, breast pain, and could potentially lead to proliferation of breast cancer cells. So I don't recommend that people use milk thistle on a daily basis. I actually tell the average woman to go read labels of her supplements to make sure that she's not taking it every day. And milk thistle should be used the way it was designed to be used, which is a liver cleanse for 7 days, you know, in the spring and the fall, that kind of thing. We want to look at things to keep our liver healthy that we take every day. You know, things like curried foods and broccoli and cantaloupes and things that are going to get our liver to detox on a regular basis. And one of the greatest ways to detoxify things is through saunas, because then you detoxify it through the skin and you're not having to deal with the liver or the detoxification system in the body. And especially with hormones, women who have been on hormone replacement therapy for a very long time should start a regimen of new foods, nutrients, and saunas to detoxify all of the hormones they've been exposed to. I like this ancient Chinese adage, a doctor would rather treat 10 men than one woman, especially when it comes to her hormones. Our doctors don't like treatments that have to be tailored to each individual. When we look at treating hormone problems in women, we have to look at each woman individually. You know, we got into a lot of trouble using Premarin and Provera in the same dose for every single woman. I can tell you that any woman who walked in a doctor's office with hormone symptoms would end up on the same prescription for Premarin and Provera, no matter how big they were, no matter what their lifestyle was all about. And so when we look at treating hormones, we have to look at the whole system. Before I go into talking about thyroid and adrenals, we're going to take a break. It's huge. This is the first time in history we've had more women over the age of 50 than under. First time ever. That means we have a lot of hot flashing, fanning, forgetting their keys, crying women out there who are not getting help. That's the bottom. They're just not getting the help they need. So what happened was I started to realize that people think a lot of their symptoms are menopause symptoms when they're not. A lot of the symptoms we have of low thyroid, exhausted adrenals, and a congested liver are exactly that. They're happening because our thyroid is low, because our adrenals are tired, and because our liver is not working well, and yet they get called menopause symptoms. So this is important if you're trying to help people who are having hot flashes and night sweats. You need to know maybe these things are happening for another reason. As well, not every woman gets hot flashes and night sweats. A lot of women get terrible anxiety, panic attacks, angry outbursts, depression. So there's two real clear sets of people at menopause that will have different kinds of symptoms. And let's hope that women never get all the symptoms. So that's, you know, hot flashes, memory loss, brain fog, night sweats, urinary incontinence, water retention. The list is so long. If we look at something like exhausted adrenals, one of the hallmark symptoms is you fall asleep just fine, but you wake up several hours later wide awake. That's a classic sign of adrenal exhaustion. Usually you lie awake from 3 to 5 in the morning, then you just crash back to sleep. Night sweats in menstruating women, that is a classic sign of low thyroid. So not all the symptoms that we categorize as menopause symptoms have anything to do with menopause. They have a lot more to do with the thyroid, the adrenals, and the liver. And when we look at the symptoms of adrenal fatigue, you know, you used to be able to have a glass of wine, but now you're drunk after a glass of wine. That is a very classic sign of adrenal exhaustion. Salt cravings, you would rather have the salt shaker than the popcorn. You have to have coffee to get going. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you feel that big slump. You have difficulty handling stress. Everything bugs you. All of a sudden, really stupid little things become a big deal. Crying jags, belly fat, weight gain, and these are just some of the signs of adrenal exhaustion. And I am really clear when I talk to women and men, the adrenals are so key to your hormone backup system that if you don't take care of them, you are going to have a nightmare menopause. So if you're in menopause, we treat the adrenals using adrenal support herbs, and we also use foods and lifestyle changes, which I'll tell you about. And if you're before menopause, you better love your adrenals by saying no. Because a lot of the problems that we have with adrenals are because we're so stressed out. You know, nobody is going to know if you made the cookies for the grade 2 class and stayed up all night. Like, just don't do it. It's like one of my kids. I spent hours making Halloween costumes, and my kids don't remember any of it. And I was the crazy mother who used to write each kid's name on the little gingerbread girls and boys that you take to school that every other mother hates. And my kids don't remember that either. So all this stressed out stuff that we do is just a complete waste of time. And really, we need to focus on our health. They'll look at pictures now and they say, oh, that's really cool, Mom, what you did. But they don't remember the moment. So how stress affects our hormones. Well, this is a big problem. Your liver needs to produce more cholesterol to make more hormones, and what happens? You get increased cholesterol. So when you're stressed out, your cholesterol goes up. Why? Because you need cholesterol to make your hormones. Also, when you're stressed out, your cortisol increases, and then what happens is we inhibit the conversion. It affects your thyroid. It inhibits the conversion of T4 thyroid hormone to T3. The adrenals and the thyroid talk to one another. So when you have exhausted adrenals or adrenals that are working too hard, your thyroid goes low. We can often bring the adrenals back up, but the thyroid stays low. And this is the connection with our epidemic of thyroid disease today. As well, when cortisol goes up, it fits in your progesterone receptors, and then you become functionally progesterone deficient. But your blood tests will say your progesterone is normal. But you're not normal because your stress hormone is filling all the little holes for progesterone. And this is a big problem. You have complete hormone dysfunction when you're under stress. Some of the best ways to de-stress is deep breathing. In through your nose, out through your mouth. We should practice it when we're driving the car, when we're sitting at our office. Salt, I don't know how salt ever got a bad rap. Because we need salt. Our adrenals need salt. And in Canada, they added potassium iodide to our salt to halt our epidemic of low thyroid and goiters. Then the cardiologist told everyone, don't eat salt. What happened? We had an epidemic of low thyroid because we don't eat foods that contain potassium iodide. And sea salt does not have potassium iodide in it. And it's not iodine that you need for your thyroid. It's iodide, which is a 3 molecule. It's a completely different form. And that's another confusion in our nutrition world. Stress and cortisol, chronic elevated cortisol alters your fat cells. We talked about that a little bit. and makes your fat cells around the middle become resistant to fat loss. So you get belly fat and you just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And interestingly enough, I told you earlier, your cortisol goes up, so does your estrogen. What happens? We get estrogen belly. You have one glass of wine and it's like your belly got bigger and bigger and bigger. It's all interrelated. So we have to get those adrenals back into balance. Exhausted adrenals also are involved in causing your digestive tract to become permeable. So you know your digestive system has these little villi. They're supposed to look like this. Well, in people who have chronic elevated cortisol, the breaks between the villi end up so that you have leaky gut syndrome. And then undigested food particles end up outside of the gut where they're not supposed to be, and then you get lots of inflammation. So that's the stress connection to the gut problems that we see happen. And cortisol is a hormone, just like insulin is a hormone, just like serotonin is a hormone. We always focus on estrogen and progesterone and testosterone, but all these other hormones play a role as well. So what do we do for the adrenals? Well, something as simple as vitamin C can make a huge difference. And, you know, most of us are not getting enough vitamin C in our diet today. Pantothenic acid, which is vitamin B5, is also very important for the manufacture of adrenal hormones. And most people are not taking a multivitamin with minerals. And we keep having all this bad press about multivitamins with minerals, yet few people are eating vegetables every day. The average Canadian eats two vegetables, and one of those is potato. That's what we eat every day, two vegetables and one is potato. So most of your clients will be basically nutrient deficient. For example, zinc and magnesium, 300 reactions in your body require those nutrients. If you're not getting them in your food, you're going to slowly become deficient over time. Iron, for example, is used in the body to make estrogen and progesterone and other hormones. So when women become iron deficient, which is really common, they end up becoming hormone disrupted as well. That's so why it's so important to have your iron levels checked. Protein. Women do not get enough protein. A woman who sits on her butt and does nothing needs 30 grams of protein a day. An egg is a perfect protein. It has about 6 grams of protein in it. That just tells you how challenging it is to get protein. I love protein powders. My favorite one is pumpkin protein, and Omega Nutrition makes a great pumpkin protein. It's certified organic. It's $19.99 a bottle. It has a great amino acid profile. It's green, but it has no taste. So Omega Nutrition pumpkin protein. And no, I don't own the company. I just like it. We eat it in our house every day. And I like it because it's vegetarian. I'm not really a fan of all the whey proteins because you can't get them organic. So you're using commercially produced whey, which then has all the other issues associated with it. Lipoic acid is a phenomenal adrenal support nutrient. It's also great for your skin. But because we're talking about hormones, lipoic acid prevents the accumulation of stress hormones in the body. So something so simple as taking a nutrient like that. The adaptogenic herbs. So adaptogens are things that bring things up or lower them down. So if your cortisol is too high, we'll bring it down. If your cortisol is too low, we'll bring it up because we want to have balance. So adaptogens are like a seesaw. So wherever you see a word adaptogen, you know that it's going to make things lower if they're too high and higher if they're too low. And those would be things like rhodiola, ashwagandha, azuma, as well as schisandra berries. Those are the four that are really powerful adaptogenic herbs. Thyroid disease. I love this photo because the thyroid does everything. It determines how quickly your heart beats. Your thyroid determines your body temperature. Your thyroid determines if you're going to be happy or sad. Your thyroid is involved in fertility. If you have low thyroid, you cannot get pregnant and you have recurring miscarriages. And your thyroid is involved in water balance. It also determines your body temperature. So if you have low thyroid, every single one of these systems don't work properly. And because we have an epidemic of low thyroid in Canada today, most of what you're going to see is low thyroid patients. You're just going to see endless numbers of people with low thyroid. The biggest problem we have is our blood test. So when people go to the doctor and they have a thyroid test done, the normal range for a TSH, which stands for thyroid stimulating hormone, in Ontario is 0.5 to 5.5. In order to be diagnosed with low thyroid, you have to be above 5.5. But the research is quite clear. People who have a TSH above 2 will have the symptoms of low thyroid. We call it subclinical hypothyroidism. And yet they won't get medication until they're over 5.5. So when people tell you their thyroid is normal, oh yeah, my doctor says it's normal, we need to teach them to learn their number. They want to have a TSH below 2. If it's between 2 and 5.5, we want to treat it so that they may never have to go on thyroid medication. If they're over 5.5, they will most likely need drugs. And thyroid hormone is one of the best drugs out there. So people always want to come off it, and they always come to me and say, I want to get off my thyroid hormone. I'm like, you're so lucky you got it, you need to stay on it. The key is to keep the dose low, not to end up on very high doses of thyroid medication. So the symptoms of low thyroid, a third of their eyebrows are gone, and they know they did not pluck them out. Hair loss, particularly you'll see this patch right on the top of the head here in women that's thin. Weight gain, freezing cold all the time, constipation, which is a really early sign of low thyroid, dry skin, dry hair, recurring miscarriages, infertility, and the never-ending menopause. You have someone in front of you who's been having hot flashes and night sweats for 3 years or more. They have low thyroid that is not being treated properly. And so we have to get the thyroid in balance. And, of course, the weight gain issue. I feel so sorry for people who are trying to lose weight who have low thyroid. If you have low thyroid that is not being treated properly, it is virtually impossible to lose the weight. Then people think they're a failure and they don't have any willpower. Has nothing to do with that. When we get your thyroid in balance, the weight just falls off. It'll come off just effortlessly. Thyroid and osteoporosis, this is a really big problem. Too much thyroid medication and bone loss occurs due to overstimulation of the osteoclasts. So we don't want to have people on a lot of thyroid medicine. We want to keep their thyroid medicine at a normal level or a lower dose so that we don't have this rebound effect. Not enough thyroid hormone and bone loss occurs. And as well, there's a direct connection to low thyroid that is not being treated properly and heart disease. And I've written a book called A Smart Woman's Guide to Heart Health and have a whole section dedicated to the fact that low thyroid is contributing to our heart disease problem in women today. If we've got almost 50% of the female population walking around with low thyroid, no wonder 33% of all deaths last year were due to cardiovascular disease. When you have low thyroid, your heart has to beat harder, and then you end up with congestive heart failure over time and floppy valves. So you've got to make sure that thyroid is in balance. The solution, I've got so much information, I'm trying not to forget things. Calcitonin is a hormone that's secreted by the thyroid gland as well. And it keeps your osteoclasts from breaking down bone. So we want to keep your bones in a much stronger state. There's this whole thing about the calcium-magnesium ratio. I thought it was one of those myths in the health food industry about that you had to have 2-to-1 or 1-to-1 ratios, but there's actually very good research done showing that if you're going to take a calcium supplement, that you take 2 parts calcium to 1 part magnesium, and there actually is a reason why. If you take too much magnesium at the same time you take calcium, it inhibits calcitonin. So that's the reason why you should be on a 2-to-1 calcium to magnesium supplement. There actually is science behind it. What nutrients do we use for low thyroid? So Health Canada has actually given us a designation at Lorna Vanderhaeghe Health Solutions. We have a line of women's nutritional supplements that are also good for men. for our ThyroSmart product for improving T4 thyroid hormone, improving the conversion of T4 to T3, and enhancing thyroid levels, so bringing the TSH level down, which is important. And we use ashwagandha, Calmophora, as well as potassium iodide and tyrosine, which is an amino acid, and some B vitamins as well. Everybody needs a multivitamin with minerals and vitamin D. The reason why we have an epidemic of low thyroid in Canada is because we don't get enough minerals in our soil, we don't get enough vitamin D from our sunshine, we don't eat enough protein containing tyrosine, and of course, few of us eat any foods that have potassium iodide. You don't see much thyroid problems in countries like Italy where they eat tons of olives because they get so much potassium iodide in their diet from the time that they're very, very young. We always want to treat the adrenals because if you have low thyroid, because the adrenals and the thyroid talk to each other, and you want to eat protein for breakfast, an egg, a chicken breast. I'm on a mission to change the way people eat. We are eating cereal, skim milk, toast, fruit. The worst breakfast in the world makes you fat, causes your blood sugar to skyrocket, and you're starving an hour later. So start the day with protein, an egg, a chicken breast, a protein shake, protein powder, and yogurt, and that will jumpstart your fat-burning furnace, and your thyroid will love you. And no soy products, which we've already talked about. What about hyperthyroid? It's something nobody talks about. It's a very serious disease that we leave to the doctors to treat because it can kill you quite quickly. Acetyl L-carnitine has actually been researched for hyperthyroid. It's the one thing that will stop thyroid storms. So that's when the thyroid really revs up. And also Modicare, which is an immune system supplement that's been researched for hyperthyroid. So those are the only two things that I have found to date that have clinical research for overactive thyroid. And and you can use any of those herbs in high amounts. They will never cause hyperthyroid. Never, never, never. Won't happen. They're so safe, you can take them along with Synthroid and levothyroxine as well, which is T4 thyroid hormone. Potassium iodide has been researched since 1901, has thousands of studies. It is so phenomenal for your thyroid. They used to use, it protects us from leukemia, it kills H. pylori in the gut, which is the leading reason for ulcers. The lack of iodine is the single reason for intellectual impairment in the offspring of pregnant women, so low IQ in kids, so it's important for that. We used to use good old potassium iodide painted on the cervix for women who had abnormal cervical cells way back, and there's a great little book, if you can ever find it, it's called Iodine and Breast Cancer. You might be able to find an old copy on Amazon. Buy it because it's the greatest little book about the connection between potassium iodide and breast cancer. So find it and read it because it's quite good. The intestines. Your intestines are involved in detoxifying hormones. So you have to have a healthy intestinal tract. And we do that by using indole-3-carbinol, D-glucarate. Those are the two great ones, along with probiotics. Health Canada just gave BioK the designation as a treatment, a recognized treatment for C. difficile. Isn't that exciting? I mean, all they're using it in the hospital is antibiotics, and my daughter's a nurse, and she said the doctors will tell right on the patient's chart who has C. difficile to take yogurt. But she said the yogurt that they buy in the hospitals has no probiotics in it, so it's a complete waste of time. But BioK now has a designation for the treatment of C. difficile. So remember that when you've got patients with colitis and other gut problems that are associated with diarrhea. And fermented foods like lactic acid, fermented sauerkraut, plant enzymes, digestive enzymes, and also Swedish bitters. Anything to get the digestive system working well. And don't drink fluids when you eat. People who have gas, burping, and bloating, they should never drink while they eat their meal because they're diluting their digestive enzymes and their stomach acid. And of course, Tums, as we all know, are the scourge because they cause you to not absorb your nutrients properly. And digestion starts in the mouth. Chew, 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 chew. if you're swallowing chunky food, there is no carburetor in there. So it's a real big problem. I've only got a few more slides, and then I'll take some questions. I didn't know how much time I had, but I thought I'd just quickly touch on a couple of things for menopause. Now you know if you've got a menopausal patient, you're going to look at the adrenals, the thyroid, the liver. If you have any woman in front of you with estrogen dominance, you're going to look at the gut, the liver. You're going to get their environment cleaned up as much as you can, and then look at the diet as well. Back in 2002, finally, they came clean and told us that synthetic hormones were dangerous. The Women's Health Initiative study was a big trial. They were trying to prove once and for all that synthetic hormones, Premarin and Provera, were safe. And what they discovered is that they are not. They were supposed to have an 8-year study. At the 5-year mark, they halted the study because they found a 26% increase in invasive breast cancer, a 41% increase in strokes, a 29% increase in heart attacks, double the rates of blood clots. They discovered that it caused the breast to become so dense they could not read breast cancer on a mammogram. They also found it caused hearing loss, and it also doubled the risk of dementia or Alzheimer's disease. A lot of women were taking Premarin and Provera to protect their heart and their bones and their brains, and they got the exact opposite, and many of them died. Because so many women died taking Premarin and Provera, they have to keep watching these women. And they've learned that 7 years after halting the drugs, they still had the same breast cancer risk as if they were taking Premarin and Provera today. And so that's why it's so important that any woman who's ever taken synthetic hormones goes on the detoxifying nutrients like indole-3-carbinol, DIM, D-glucarate, sulforaphane. We have all of those in EstroSmart. What happened after the Women's Health Initiative study, and this is also an important factor because you'll see a lot of patients, is the doctors stopped prescribing hormone replacement therapy. A lot of women threw their hormones in the garbage, and doctors started prescribing in record numbers antidepressants. So if you look at this, this is the Women's Health Initiative study. You see a decline. This is a spike in the number of prescriptions written for antidepressants. And I was at a big psychiatric meeting, and the drug companies are targeting women, or the target group, 35 to 60 for their antidepressants. And, you know, they're saying it works for hot flashes. It does not work for hot flashes.
Doesn't work.
I just knocked the sign down. And so this is a problem because it's very hard to treat people who are on antidepressants. That can often have huge weight gain. A lot of the nutrients interact with the antidepressants, and they often are severely magnesium deficient because the antidepressants cause a depletion of magnesium in the body. But this is a sad fact because now we're treating menopause as if it is a psychiatric disorder. So, big problem. This study, I think, should be on the front page of every newspaper. They did a study where they compared black cohosh, a simple herb, to Premarin, to fake pills. And one thing I want to tell you about black cohosh, although it's a great herb for hot flashes and night sweats, it takes 12 weeks to get the maximum benefit. And you should know that because if you ever tell anyone to take it, you need to warn them that if they're going to take black cohosh all on its own, that they get a slow decline in their symptoms over 12 weeks. Most women give up long before that. But this study is important because if you look at the top line, that's Premarin. If you look at the middle line, that's the fake pill. And then the line at the bottom, that is black cohosh. And at the beginning of the study, everybody had about 5 or 6 hot flashes a day, maybe more. And at the end of the study, the black cohosh group had basically none. But the estrogen group, because estrogen is the treatment, right, for hot flashes, did not fare as well as placebo. So that's very interesting. And this study has been done over and over and over again. And it was published in Maturitas, which is the most respected gynecological journal out there. I also am here to tell you that black cohosh has no estrogenic action. This is always a big shock to people. Back in 2004, they learned that black cohosh works on your temperature gauge. It has no action whatsoever on hormones or hormone receptors. As a result of that, they've done 2 large clinical trials in women with estrogen receptor positive breast cancer on tamoxifen. Tamoxifen is a drug that blocks estrogen. It's used for cancer treatment. The problem with it is it can cause 15 hot flashes a day or more. And a lot of women will quit their cancer treatment because of the hot flashes. So the oncologists, once they proved that black cohosh had no hormone action, that it works on our temperature gauge, they then did these big studies with women who had cancer on black cohosh. At the end of the one-year study, again published in Maturitas, the most respected gynecological journal, the cancer doctor said black cohosh was a safe, effective, non-estrogenic treatment for breast cancer in women with cancers. So, really exciting news. I like black cohosh along with other things because most women don't have the patience to wait 12 weeks for their hot flashes to go away. So, but it's important for you to know that it has no, it is not a phytoestrogen. And any book that still calls black cohosh a phytoestrogen, I wouldn't trust the writer because they haven't read the research. And all of these studies are on our website. Never take a pill that has more side effects than you have symptoms. Yeah. Don't you love those ads from the U.S., you know? I saw one the other night. It said, anal leakage, death. I mean, people don't even listen to this stuff, right? It was for restless leg syndrome, and they were going to get anal leakage. It's shocking, right?
That's a good trade-off.
Yeah. This is my book, A Smart Woman's Guide to Hormones. I have a nutrition course online that you can take as well. And the website is Hormone Help. I also have a regular radio show that is on every Wednesday that you can call in and ask questions. All of the podcasts are on the website. We have lots of free books like Get a Grip on Arthritis and your 30-Day Heart Smart Solution on the website as well. Just tons of information. We've got over 2,000 pages. I am happy to answer your questions. Yes? Yes. That bacterial enzyme, glucuronidase, it is produced, well, first off, you produce lots of glucuronidase if you are eating things like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, lactic acid, sauerkraut, organic, fermented yogurts, you know, all those kinds of things. Most of us don't have a lot of it. But what it does is, well, we want to get things out of the body. So in order to get things out of the body, we want to join it to something else so it can be carried out either in urine or stool or through the pores in the system. And so we want to make sure that we have enough of it, and it breaks it up. So if you have too much of this negative enzyme, it'll break up the couple, and then what happens is the toxin dumps in your system instead of leaving the body.
So that's why I was curious, because you're saying you need it to get to have a breakdown, but if you get too much...
Yeah, then you have a problem.
So how do you know if you get too much?
You'll feel nauseous when you're doing cleanses. When people do detoxification programs and then they feel nauseous, weak, they have to go to bed, those kinds of things. Or severe diarrhea is another one. You know, people who get diarrhea from different types of... Yes?
Do you need to take DIM as a supplement if you're taking indole-3-carbinyl? Does it break down in the gut?
This is my favorite question. My absolute all-time favorite question. No, the question is, if you take indole-3-carbinol, do you need to take DIM as a separate supplement, considering that indole-3-carbinol makes DIM in the gut? So it's interesting, you know, the DIM suppliers, the people who make DIM as a supplement, they came out and they told the whole world you had to take DIM on its own. But it didn't make any sense whatsoever, because when you take indole-3-carbinol or foods that are that contain indole-3-carbinol, you're going to make DIM anyways in your digestive tract. We actually added DIM to our supplement because so many women were convinced by the research that the DIM suppliers put out that you had to have it separately. But the answer is no. You don't have to have it separately because you're going to make lots of it when you take indole-3-carbinol. Yes?
Could you tell us what your typical diet is in a day?
What my diet is? My husband would laugh. Whenever I have popcorn for dinner, he says, I'm going to tell everybody that you eat popcorn for dinner, right? But
I've been pretty much vegetarian since I was 14. And so I don't eat a lot of, I eat fish, so I guess you could call me a fishitarian, but a pescatarian. But I eat tons and tons of vegetables. I buy Glad Ziploc freezer bags by the caseful because I fill them with broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, and kale, and celery every morning, right to the top, and I eat that all day long. People at my office laugh because I always have this gigantic bag of veggies. I love organic yogurt. I eat pumpkin protein powder as my protein source. I eat so many fatty acids, it's scary. I drink bottlefuls of GLA oil every week. And I have a very high-stress job because I live in airplanes all the time and I'm running a very busy business with lots of young people working there. So, but that's sort of my diet. And I take lots of nutritional supplements because when I was very young, I worked for the Canadian Schizophrenia Foundation, which also owns the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine. So I got to meet the late Linus Pauling and Emmanuel Taraskin and all of the great, great people out there. They were my mentors. And I remember one time being at dinner somewhere, and there was this older man. He was 87, and he had the most beautiful skin. And I said to him, I just couldn't stop staring at him. He was gorgeous. I said, I've got to ask you, what do you do for your skin? He said, I'm trying to prove to the world that vitamin A is not toxic. And he said, I take 100,000 IUs every day, and I'm not dead, and I've been doing it now for 25 years, and I'm proving to the world that that vitamin A is not toxic. You know, so...
And do you do that?
No, I don't take that much vitamin A. I take lots and lots of GLA. Everyone's in the fish oil kick, but there's no GLA in fish oil, and I could do a whole talk on fats. And if you do webinars, I do a lot of webinars. They're great because I can be at home in Vancouver and teach people anywhere and everywhere. And fatty acids is a whole two-hour talk on its own. Yes?
Is much of the sulfuric thing destroyed in cooking, or is the benefit better if it's raw?
Okay. So sulforaphane, the biggest bulk of it is found in sprouts. So if you have broccoli sprouts or if you have any of the cruciferous veggies sprouted, you will get tons of it. In cooking, I don't think it's broken down so much in cooking. There have been research looking at indole-3-carbinol and DIM and D-glucrate and what happens to their stability. In nutritional supplements, DIM is not that stable, so you have to buy it stabilized. Indole-3-carbinol can also be unstable at times as well. Sulforaphane, not so much. And they have sulforaphane in an ointment now as well. Yeah. Yes?
I was hoping that we would touch on amenorrhea, because in my clinical practice, I have a lot of teenage girls that don't get their periods at all.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I find that to be a huge issue.
It's a big issue. So no periods at all. Well, generally we see what happens is, as you've just learned, lots of environmental hormones. You have to have this rise in estrogen and then the increase in progesterone and then a drop in progesterone. The drop in progesterone signals the uterine lining to slough off. So if you don't have enough progesterone and you've got too much estrogen, you don't end up having periods. So this is the estrogen dominance problem that we see at great length. What do we do for that? Well, we try to do it naturally first, and then sometimes we have to move to the drug treatment. So when we're looking at how to get periods to reoccur, we use things like D-glucrate, DIM, sulforaphane, indole-3-carbinol, and then we add Vitex. Vitex or chasteberry berry. And we do that because that enhances luteinizing hormone and progesterone. So we get the ovaries producing follicles, which then release different hormones as well. So we usually use EstroSmart Plus, and we use 2 capsules a day. That's to get the woman ovulating again. If they're not ovulating in 3 months using EstroSmart Plus, and now we've cleaned up the environment in the home and all the junk and get rid of all those white carbohydrates that are causing infertility as well. And then we, if at that point it's not working, then we go to the drug Prometrium, which is bioidentical progesterone, and you take 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off of Prometrium. So 2 weeks off to mimic estrogen rise,
and then 2 weeks on Permetrium, and we use 400 milligrams at bedtime. This is only to get periods back. We would never give other women Permetrium at that level. It's too much. And 400 milligrams at bedtime. Why at bedtime? Because if you take Permetrium, it knocks you out. So only for the women we're trying to get their periods to come back again. And we do it 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. It usually shocks the system into having a regular period. But we have a lot of amenorrhea today. Yes?
Can you comment on wild yam?
Oh, yes. If anybody picks up my Smart Woman's Guide to Hormones book, which we have tonight, which is the Bible, there's a whole section dedicated to the wild yam scam. Okay. So before, what used to happen, in the U.S., you can buy bioidentical hormones in any health food store. And they had wild yam creams. They called them wild yam creams, but if you read the label, it would say 20% USP progesterone. So they had progesterone in them. Then in Canada, about 8-9 years ago, Health Canada cracked down on all the hormones coming across the border. And so then you saw yam cream, same name, but with no USP progesterone. Yam is actually estrogenic. It is not progestogenic. And wild yams are not like the yams we eat. Mexico and South Africa actually produce massive amounts of wild yams to be used to make hormones, bioidentical and synthetic hormones. The birth control pill used to be made from wild yam. It is no longer. It's all synthesized. But it's a big scam. So if you bought wild yam in the States, it would have 20% USP progesterone, which is a drug in Canada. So in Canada, all of our bioidentical hormones are prescription drugs. So does that help you? Yes?
I noticed you don't use adrenal glandulas in your formulation.
Okay.
I was wondering if you might speak to that.
The question is, I noticed that you don't use adrenal glandulars in your formula. Why not? Well, adrenal glands are glands from animals, and I would have to go there, make sure that they actually are doing some kind of preliminary to make sure those glands are safe. We have a lot of bizarre diseases that are coming from animals today, and so you're using an animal gland. The other thing is the concept, which has not actually been proven, is that we take adrenal glands of an animal and feed them to humans to make your own glands work better. So I don't like the concept. I don't think there's enough research. I also don't like the fact of taking animal glands. The vegetarians wouldn't touch it anyways. But the cleanliness of animal parts in products is an issue. Yeah. So that's the reason why. Yeah. Yes? Okay, this is a good question. Do I think that soy is better if it's non-GMO? Well, actually, in the studies that I talked about where they gave women the 8-ounce glass of soy milk, they had non-GMO organic soy and regular soy. It makes no difference whatsoever. But if you're going to have tempeh, miso, soy sauce, or natto, you should make sure that it's organic, you know, and non-GMO. The majority, you know why they genetically modified soybeans? When they have the soybean plant in the field, they were spraying Roundup, which is a pesticide, and the Roundup killed the plants. So they genetically modified the soy plant to be Roundup ready, protected, just so that the Roundup would not kill the soy plant. So we have Roundup ready soy is what we're eating in our environment, which is a pesticide-laden product. That's why they genetically modified it. So it's all bad. Yes? Okay. Yes, for some people they are. We now know that a lot of women are getting night sweats because their blood sugar is dropping in the middle of the night. And I didn't do my full menopause talk because it's an hour. But a lot of women are getting night sweats in the middle of the night because their blood sugar drops. We've actually found if you get a woman to eat half a chicken breast or a couple pieces of cheese or some protein powder before she goes to bed, that the night sweats disappear. And so... Oh, yes, we still use black cohosh to treat night sweats. I don't like black cohosh on its own. I use it with other modifying herbs.
you know, things like Vitex and Gamma Risinol and Hesperidin and things like that, because you want to get fast relief of hot flashes and night sweats, and we always take it in the morning and at bedtime. Bedtime dose is really important to stop those night sweats, because you're soaked and then you have to get up and get dressed and, you know, change and all of that. Yes?
Why is it not mandatory to tell us if it's TMO?
Okay. The question is, why is it not mandatory to tell us if the product is genetically modified? Because the big companies are bigger than you and me, and they actually get to tell Health Canada what to do. So we need to complain. You know, I worked for Alive magazine 20 years ago when they wanted to bring bovine growth hormone-fed milk into our country. And Siegfried Gersh at the time was the owner of Alive magazine. We started this national campaign to halt this kind of bovine growth hormone, BGH, in milk. And we were very successful. Literally hundreds of thousands of Canadians signed petitions, and that's why Canada does not have bovine growth hormone in its milk. If you go to the States and buy milk, it's full of it. So we're a powerful group. If we want something, let's just go get it, right? Yeah, just somebody just needs to go out there and start a campaign to label GMO foods. And one more question? One more. The very back. Okay, yeah. Can I comment on taking DHEA? Well, thankfully in Canada, DHEA is a drug. DHEA is a mother hormone. It's used to make all the other hormones. It can make all of them. And the problem with DHEA is you should not ever take it unless you need it, and because it can cause, you know, high estrogen levels, and it's a fuel. It's a very powerful hormone. So you want to have a blood test, a DHEAS, has a little S on the end for the blood test. And if you're low in DHEA, then yes, you could take it, but not in these super high doses. In the U.S., they're selling DHEA in 25 and 50 milligram dose. That's too much for most people. I've found little bits like 5 milligrams will do great things for people with low DHEA. For lupus sufferers, anyone with lupus should definitely have their DHEA checked, because it's generally in the pit of despair. Their cortisol goes up, their DHEA drops. If we give them a little bit of DHEA, their immune system calms down. So anyone with autoimmune disease should look at this. But no, I would not take DHEA as some anti-aging hormone. That would be a huge mistake. And we have to remember, hormones are powerful messengers. Powerful, powerful. Thank you very much, everybody. You're absolutely wonderful.